Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to the Economics for Rebels, the podcast series of the European Society for Ecological Economics. Not too long ago, it was an act of rebellion to pursue economics as if nature mattered. This rebellion continues. This is a podcast dedicated to exploring the economics of just and sustainable transformations. Conversations with and for those who are ready to act on rapid and radical change for people and planet. Welcome to our podcast. I am your host, Alexandra Kamesh, and you are listening to the Economics for Rebels podcast. Ecological economics is about socio-ecological transformation. Once we realize that current institutions, norms, and narratives must change, the overarching question remains, how can we change them? Eric Olin Wright was an American sociologist whose work on transforming into post-capitalist societies have impacted many who deal with transcending the mainstream framework. Today's guest, Yekaterina Chetkovskaya, builds on Wright's ideas when drawing up what she calls a strategic canvas for degrowth. In this episode, we will explore this canvas that appears in a book called Degrowth and Strategy, How to Bring About Social Ecological Transformation. The book is coming out in April 2022. Katja is a degrowth activist scholar, a researcher at Lund University, Sweden. Her research lies in the areas of degrowth and critical organizational studies. It addresses crises of today and explores paths for socio-ecological transformation. She has written on corporate violence, problems with work and employability, and the plastic crisis on the one hand, and focusing on degrowth as a vision for transformation, its political economy and alternative models of work and organizing on the other. Welcome, Katja.
Thanks a lot for having me. Hi.
When we talk of all the issues in ecological economics, the question always lingers in the air. Yeah, it's all okay. And yes, we would all like to live in a fairer, ecologically more sustainable system. But how? How can we transform everything we now have, and most of them going wrongly, to something we would want? And as I mentioned in the introduction, you have a book with the Vienna Degrowth Team coming out in April 2022. And in that book, you write about strategies to degrowth. But strategies are normally seen as ways to you set your goal, you then plan the road to get there. But when we talk about degrowth or ecological economics, it's very difficult even to set a goal. And planning to get there is even more difficult because we need clumsy solutions. We try something and then see what happens and then try to adjust. So in this perspective, what is strategy in your understanding?
Yes, good and big questions. And I would say that it's exactly what kind of motivated the book. So in the sense that we have the visions already, but then how do we get there is the big question that is hanging in the air somewhat. So then strategy for us is a way to think about this, how to bring about social ecological transformation. So in that sense, strategy is kind of a way of thinking analytically about the how question. And also what we want, so we have been thinking in the editorial team about the definition of strategy and kind of how we understand it. And what we want to stress that it is not something kind of rigid. It's not just a plan that is then implemented. So it is in a way a flexible mental map, we call it. So something that you think about analytically and then you adjust as you move on in implementing it. And then also we kind of understand that sometimes being active in practice and kind of implementing alternatives, it has also some strategic elements, even without thinking about them consciously. But we think it is important to think about strategies consciously in order to kind of analyze what we're doing and what we could do differently to bring about transformation. So in that sense, strategy is also kind of a thought construct, so something that we can think about in the abstract and to implement in a flexible way as we work in different directions on the alternatives. And then, of course, it's important to say the strategy also involves a lot of organization and coordination. So also these are the key features of kind of strategic thinking for us.
Yes, when we talk about strategy, we normally think of organizations and institutions, but I'm not perfectly sure that that's the only thing we mean when strategy in degrowth, because it involves social movements, okay? It involves organizations who want to go towards this transformation, but it's also individuals. Like, what do I believe? How can I change the world? So when we normally hear about strategies, we normally think of organizations, but in that sense, who is it for and why is it important to talk about strategy at all?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think definitely organizations, or we can say different actors for degrowth, that's one of the agents we have in mind for thinking about strategies. Then we can also think of degrowth as a movement. And that's also something that we address in the book. And also we really hope that the book will speak to other movements or organizations that are implementing alternatives, radical alternatives, which are not necessarily kind of, maybe they frame them as degrowth, but which somehow connect to what degrowth is arguing for. So in that sense, I think that we're talking about strategy as mainly a collective effort, so on different organizational levels. But then, of course, as an individual, you can join these collective efforts in the way you see fit for yourself. So in the spirit of degrowth, it is about this collective bottom-up efforts for transformations that we can think about analytically and strategically.
I quite like systems thinking. And in systems thinking, there is this concept of emergence. And also in degrowth, we often talk about, you know, having multiple ways of doing things and a myriad of ideas. So these bottom-up initiatives should be very diverse, should be really localized. And when I see the term strategies in this context, my question is, should we not just leave things as they are and allow and enable people to do whatever they want and how they believe, and then trust this kind of emergence of new phenomena and of new narratives and actions? What do you think of that?
Yeah, I very much sympathize with the concept of emergence also. And some years ago, perhaps 2017 it was, we had an issue on emergence in Ephemera Journal, so a long-term commitment of mine, where we kind of tried to approach it from different ways. And I think that's, we can think of degrowth through the lens of emergence. But perhaps the problem is that there are really many visions. There are all kind of a multiple vision of what degrowth is about. There are ideas of what can bring us there. So some kind of policies, or how to change the institutions, how to bring together the different energies of the movements, and so on. But the problem is that we are not there, so it's not emerging somehow. Or you can say that, okay, there are many seeds and many alternatives, but still it's this very destructive power of fossil capital, and that is driving the environmental and social destruction that is still very much there and very much shapes the rules of the game. So in that sense, even if the ideas are there, no institutions are adapting towards the gross ideas, or if we see something, it is so kind of marginal that you can almost neglect it. So in that sense, kind of trying to think again about the how, and not only maybe sticking to concepts such as emergence, is a way of maybe amplifying our efforts towards transformation, or so we hope.
And you also stress that transformation, knowing what kind of transformation we want or what kind of transformation we imagine, is really important. And you are using Eric Olin Wright, the American sociologist's work, to outline that there are three different ways of transforming a system. One is you can just change the rules of the game. The other one is that you make a particular move in the game. So you play by the rules, but still try to make a bold move. And the third one is just to abandon the game completely and start playing a new game. So which one of these transformations are we talking about when considering strategies to degrowth?
Yeah, when thinking of strategy and also in relation to degrowth, our awareness has always been that degrowth is a multiple concept. So we don't want to like impose a particular vision of strategy on whoever connects to degrowth. So we think that this multiplicity of degrowth needs to be reflected in how we think about strategy. And in that sense, strategy needs to be plural and multiple also. And it really a lot depends on the context, so kind of what kind of actor you are, which situation you're in, and then the direction you take will really depend on this. And in that sense, all the different directions that Wright outlines, so they should be implemented within degrowth in different contexts. So it's kind of a mixture, let's say, a mix of these strategies that we think would be helpful. But then we need to also think, okay, how can strategies be, so in which context this or this strategy can be chosen, or also how to avoid co-optation of our efforts. So for example, to start with changing the rules of the game, so that's something that Wright connects to symbiotic transformation, and he's very much sympathetic towards that direction of achieving change. And basically it's about kind of changing the very institutions that shape our societies towards different goals. So for example, towards the goals that are compatible with degrowth and that are compatible with social ecological transformation. And I think that's where also we see the limits of degrowth currently, because policy ideas or the ideas of institutional changes, we see that this needs to be an intervention there, and we cannot shy away from not changing the institutions. But then also Wright's thinking kind of helps us to see the difference in how this transformation can be pursued. So he also has this distinction between the different anti-capitalist strategic logics, as he calls it. And for symbiotic transformation, it is dismantling and taming capitalism. And I think there is really an important somehow tension and difference there that we need to be aware of when going for symbiotic transformation. So it is important that our efforts are oriented towards dismantling the system and really changing the rules and the frame itself ultimately, but also to be really aware that our efforts can end up just taming capitalism, which is of course something, but is far from the radical change that we are calling for. So that is the thinking around changing the rules of the game, which is really where many degrowthers are going towards now, but there is this awareness there of the balance between taming and dismantling that we need to keep an eye on, let's say.
I don't know a lot of degrowthers who really believe in the other one, like making a particular move within the system, because we keep talking about system change. So basically making a bold move within the game seems a bit far from these visions. But still, maybe they are adequate. What do you think?
I would say actually that here maybe the kind of metaphor of Wright, it's not as intuitive, because I think that by talking about the moves within the game, he actually speaks of interstitial transformation. So the logic of transformation when like alternatives are created, smaller scale within the system, which may really radically question the system, but then they are kind of small to change or trigger massive change of the system. So I think that actually this part of the game metaphor really refers to what a lot of degrowth alternatives are about. So this small scale change, which fundamentally questions the system, but all often kind of exists on the margins of the current growth, profit, capital-oriented economic system. So in that sense, I think that's kind of the core of degrowth, because when we think of the examples that we really can kind of vouch for and say, okay, that's what degrowths are about, we do think about this grassroots, direct, democratic alternatives. But then also, I guess, the awareness among many degrowthers is that there are many of these out there, but it's kind of hard for them to spread and to flourish without some kind of institutional changes also, because the institutions out there often prevent us from change happening and also make these alternatives very fragile and kind of very precarious. And Wright kind of sees this interstitial alternatives or interstitial transformation as part of how transformation will happen. And he really sees the combination of this together with symbiotic as the way forward. But I think he somewhat downplays the importance of interstitial transformation. So he, when he talks about the logics, the anti-capitalist logics that connect to this, he speaks of resisting and escaping capitalism. While actually, I think that talking about escaping capitalism for interstitial alternatives is perhaps not enough, because many of them are building alternatives and building counter institutions within the hostile environment and within the hostile world. And if we think about peasant-to-peasant processes of Via Campesina, if we think about the autonomous network of the Zapatista or solidarity economies, then actually this kind of building of counter-institutions and building alternatives despite the hostile environment is something key to them. So I think that's also at the core of the growth, but it is important to try and still change the institutions and change the rules of the game so that they are more or less hostile to what we are doing, let's say, or to what these multiple efforts are calling for.
And the third one was playing a different game. And how to start playing completely different games is probably the topic of a new podcast. But we both know of failed attempts in history. And Wright was also fully aware of these failed attempts. Nonetheless, we probably still need to think of this when we talk about degrowth. Like, okay, we don't want to play the game. So when you talk about cooptation, sometimes it's like, if they start playing our game, it's not our game anymore. So it really shows that we do want to play a different game.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's actually where my kind of main disagreement with Wright lies, because he kind of sidelines what he calls ruptural transformation. And that is about, yeah, playing a different game. So he sidelines this as a logic of transformation because of the past problematic ways in which such transformations have been implemented. And I think here the kind of issue is that he usually refers to rupture as change, massive change from one day to the other, which rarely happens like this. And I think that it's probably helpful to think of ruptures as more like small scale and temporal. And I think that is something that is helpful to think in relation to degrowth and in relation to social ecological transformation. Wright actually does kind of acknowledge that thinking about ruptures is possible, but he doesn't somehow develop this further. So, and what
in your understanding, rupture is not necessarily a revolution.
Yeah, exactly. So it can be like a revolution within a particular space, for example. So when workers occupy a factory, that is a small-scale rupture within a particular organization. So, or when the protesters of and the Gelände occupy a mine, it is a temporal rupture also. So for me, that's kind of helpful to see these efforts as ruptures, and I think they do something different than, for example, the interstitial alternatives, in the sense that there is this break that happens with the existing structure for a short time or kind of within a particular space, but it does something different than building an alternative from scratch, perhaps according to the rules of the game. So, for example, if you occupy a factory, then you get the space and the infrastructure that this factory has, which is something that one might never dream of if they're starting some kind of interstitial alternative and setting their workers' cooperative in the first place. And then such examples as kind of occupied spaces, factories, gardens, and other examples that we might think about. So they also give an example for others, okay, this is how you can break with the system and do something different with the space that had been driven by different logics before. And then also in a way, then having made this rupture, you enter the space of interstitial alternatives, but also you can advocate or show the direction for the more institutional changes for how the rules of the game could change to support these kinds of initiatives, let's say. So yeah, I think it's kind of important to think about ruptures this way, because also if you're waiting for the institutional changes to come, you might never be able to run, to have this kind of worker-run space or people-run occupied garden or something like this.
Is there a sequence also to this? Like a sequence in time, like, okay, you start with just making a bold move and then you change the rules of the game and then you end up changing the whole game itself. Is there a sequence or no?
Yeah, that's something I would need to think about more, I would say, but probably it depends on the context, because I think that this kind of example of ruptures, it very nicely shows how it's not like three fragmented logics of transformation that we're talking about. They connect and they can be merged in quite fruitful ways, but it really, I don't think we can come up with a recipe of how to do this. So yeah, probably in case of rupture, it's something that happens, but then the very practices that will be implemented in this, say, occupied space will very much connect to the interstitial alternatives and look for spaces of changing the rules of the game. Even if we know that a lot of the occupied spaces often at the threat of being closed down and being removed from where they are by the authorities, or I don't know, being switched off from electricity and some basic supplies and things like this. So also there will be a struggle there, but perhaps the direction could then be to merge or to unite forces with other alternatives, whether having the ones that came as a result of rupture or as a result of interstitial efforts, and then to look for systemic change together. But in other cases, it could be different.
We kind of ended up with six different strategies, because within these transformations, there is strategies that resist, escape, tame, dismantle, hold, smash. These are things that you've already mentioned, but can we go through all of them to really understand and maybe use examples how these different strategies work and how they can be maybe combined?
Yeah.
So let's start with resist.
Yes. So resisting is the strategic logics that is associated with interstitial transformation, or if using the game metaphor, so with this kind of particular but radical moves within the game. So, and then say, organizing a climate movement. So that would be an example of, well, depends which kind of action is used. But for example, if it is the protest without occupation, and if it is, I don't know, Fridays for Future, let's say campaigns, then it would be very much in line with this resisting logic. So the idea is to bring awareness to a problem such as climate change and to make yourself hurt, but then it's not that this action that is implemented within the strategic logic changes the structure or kind of transcends the structure. So it more kind of tries to, well, to call for action, let's say.
What about escaping, which you then also add building alternatives?
Yeah, exactly. So Wright uses the logic of escaping. And my point is that it's not just escaping, it's also building alternatives. And actually this building of counter institutions is quite key for bottom-up transformation. So that's basically connected to interstitial logic of transformation and to all this often small-scale grassroots-driven alternatives that we speak about in DeGrowth. And it is about, yeah, kind of building the alternative spaces in the presence, and also I think the more and transcending the structures in the presence. So for example, having different work relations, so having a collectively run, worker-owned organization instead of capital-run and capital-controlled organization. So kind of doing something different within the hostile, in general, environment. And I think here is quite important also maybe this difference between escaping and building alternatives. They do connect, but also there might be some examples that perhaps Wright would be skeptical about, which try to build their own beautiful world outside the system, but they're not necessarily politicized and not necessarily try to move beyond their comfortable spaces. So I don't know, it could be that running some eco community, which is very nice inside this community, but then not really, I don't know, not being open for newcomers or not engaging with the other similar alternatives and trying to expand this network. And in that sense, I think for maybe for the grocers, one interesting direction of action would also be like thinking how can the alternatives that we can sympathize with, but maybe which are not so politicized, so how can they become not just efforts to escape capitalism, but also to build alternatives? So how do we move from comfortable, fragile spaces to the spaces that try to spread, support each other, and actually act politically?
Yeah, so the main difference is, to my understanding, is that if you escape, you're doing it for yourself, for your close community. If you're building alternatives, then you really look into the environment that you're building, into what impact that has on others, and maybe even helping others adopt it or scale it up or anything like that. So one is an outward looking, the other escaping is an inward looking.
Yeah.
Neither of them likes the rules of the game, so they change the rules of the game, but one is a very internally focused and the other one is with an outer focus.
Yeah, exactly. And I would say that also it's a fine line, and also you may want to really make a point to the world, but then constantly engaging with like making the alternative survive in the first place, you may go more into the direction of escaping. So you might be willing to act politically and you have built an alternative that works differently politically, but because I don't know, of often doing these things on a very precarious basis and kind of despite the other situations that surround you, you can end up kind of just firefighting, let's say, and only escaping rather than doing something more. So in that sense, maybe also those of us who are part of different initiatives and different alternatives can think, okay, how do we not get stuck in the escaping, even if the very escape can be an important demonstration of something different. So how do we go towards more political action?
So what about taming and dismantling?
So yeah, this is kind of the anti-capitalist strategic logics connected to symbiotic transformation or to changing the rules of the game. And dismantling is the kind of logic that ultimately transcends the current structures. And taming is when something kind of gets changed, but very incrementally. And I would say that both are important. So in a way that if we say that, I don't know, the European Union says that we are no longer striving for growth, now it is about post-growth and well-being. So that probably would be an example of taming because the logic somewhat changes, but then it doesn't necessarily change everything. So it could still be that there is no orientation towards growth, but there is, for example, the exploitation and unequal exchange with the global south that is at the core of the policies that are being pursued. And that's one step, but it's not where we want this step to end and say, okay, good, now there is no need for the degrowth movement because someone speaks about post-growth out there. And it's very important that our efforts towards transformation do not kind of result in some very incremental changes that don't really mean much on their own. So, but then dismantling is, for example, kind of having the, if we kind of stick to policies or institutional changes, so something that would really help to, well, to dismantle the destructive structures and support the interstitial alternatives. So, for example, stopping and phasing out fossil infrastructure would be an example of dismantling and something that is much needed, but also supporting the interstitial alternatives that we have been referring to. So that would also be an example of dismantling. So instead of channeling the huge subsidies, as it is the case now, towards different kind of big corporations, fossil industry, and so on, to channel this towards the grassroots alternatives. So that would be a different kind of logics, let's say, of institutional action.
And finally, we have halting and smashing. We're going to have a podcast with Andreas Mann, I guess. He knows a bit about smashing. But what's the difference?
Yeah, so here, the halting is something that I have added to Wright's categories because he only associates smashing as a logic of ruptural transformation. So, and as playing a different game, and he really sees the limits of smashing. So I see smashing differently, because if it is small scale or temporal smashing, or maybe the kind of smashing that you will be discussing with Andreas in terms of kind of certain examples of sabotage and so on. So it is kind of different than smashing of the system as a whole, which, yeah, doesn't sound so realistic. But then I also was thinking that smashing is something that transcends the structures. And then also for Wright, ruptural transformation, it transcends the existing structures and then changes the game itself. But I think there is also, if we think about ruptures as temporal and spatial, then also it could be that ruptures don't necessarily transcend the structure, but they kind of stop something destructive from happening. So disobedience action is a key example of this. So you don't really stop the whole mining machine from operating, but you do for like a small kind of amount of time, and you make a point with this, and then also you can connect to other kind of logics of transformation with this action. But I think there is something about stopping that is also important, and sometimes I don't know if you have some expansion of mining next to you, some forest being cut next to you, and all the permissions are already there and the authorities supported, that you might have no choice but to go and stop it and kind of try to intervene into this, which I also see as an example, yeah, of rupture.
Well, thank you very much for this conversation. This is really enlightening. To close out this episode, I would like to ask you the question I ask all my guests. What is your rebellion?
Yeah, that's a big one and kind of a hard one to frame in a nuanced way. So I would say that, yes, so my rebellion is definitely for degrowth and for social ecological transformation, and kind of insisting that we need radical systemic change rather than just incremental change. And then for me, probably it's also, so rebellion is definitely about going, well, as a scholar, the rebellion is going beyond academia. And I think that within the degrowth movement, we kind of are aware that many of us are connected to academia in the first place. And it is important to change and kind of to speak to the different movements that give very powerful examples of transformation out there. But also, I think that it is important to be part of transforming academia itself. So in that sense, advocating for degrowth within the spaces of the university, or being engaged in open access independent publishing. So something that I have also been doing. So these are also some important and meaningful, let's say, efforts for me. And then also, I think that also when thinking about strategies and rebellion, so it could be that some people would say, okay, we need to prioritize this issue. We need to prioritize climate change because that's most urgent. But kind of for me, it's a rebellion. It is about fighting on different fronts and kind of choosing your fronts and then also trying to connect the multiple efforts. So, yeah, something like this, I would say. But maybe also I would like to kind of bring up again in relation to the question of strategy, the rebellion of the new generations of activists and scholars, because I think the very discussion of strategy emerges from this young people coming to the conference. It was in Malmo that I was involved in organizing and looking at what was happening and saying, yeah, we're really degrowthers, we're associated with this, but we need to move forward in the discussions that we have. So we need to think about strategy. And also, like many others, I was first not maybe super convinced and thinking, strategy, yeah, what a strange term. But then kind of thinking with them and being part of this wonderful book effort made me think perhaps outside the spaces of my comfort. And I think that also it has stimulated me to think differently. So in that sense, rebellion is also about being open to thinking differently and moving beyond the comfort zone, which I hope the book is doing and will do to the readers.
Thank you very much, Katja. And thanks to all of you for spending time with us. Stay tuned with us for our next episode. Bye, Katja.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the podcast series of the European Society for Ecological Economics. If you like the conversation and your work is related to ecological economics in any discipline, consider becoming a member of our society to stay connected. If you are ready to discuss the topic, join our Facebook group called European Society for Ecological Economics.